Hi, this is Adam Lundquist from the Houston Dynamo, and thank you for listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
We roll on here on Soccer Matters, and a huge thank you, as always, to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, there's a lot of components to making this soccer show available each and every week. The presenting sponsor is a big piece of it. John and his firm, they're personal injury attorneys. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, John and his firm is going to work for you 24-7. 713-322-HURT. 713-322-HURT, the Daspit Law Firm. They bring you a personalized approach. They're also bringing you this show that you get to listen to, that hopefully you want to call into when you have an opinion, or when you go to the podcast at podcastarena.com or on iTunes or Spotify. So there's a whole thing going on here. Sponsors, content, listeners, and then the support of a great station in ESPN 97.5. So just remember, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, and without you, the soccer fan, the listener, the podcast downloader, we wouldn't be where we are. All right, let's go to Warren Barton, former Newcastle defender on some of the craziness in the Premier League. Joining us now, former Newcastle United defender. You've seen him on television for Fox, also with LAFC. He's Warren Barton. Warren, thanks very much for coming on the program.
Absolute pleasure, my friend. No problem.
All right, you know I'm going to hit you with a good one right from the start. Whose result was worse, Manchester United's or Liverpool's?
From my point of view, I think it was Manchester United. Liverpool can draw a line under it and say, you know, that was a one-off. Aston Villa was magnificent. We was awful. We gave him some goals. So, you know, from that point of view, I think Liverpool can sort of say, look, it was a bad day at the office. Now we're going to obviously focus and people go away international. Manchester United's been coming. And they haven't addressed problems. They haven't addressed their back line, the Gea, the confidence in the team, the drive in the team, the fight in the team, the quality in the team. That sent alarm bells for me because we see it against Crystal Palace. They scuffed along against Brighton. And then that performance that they had at the weekend. I know they get the red card and he goes down, Lamella. It's embarrassing the way he goes on the floor and rolls around. Luke Shaw's lucky not to get sent off. But I think the reaction from the players and Ollie is a big, big sign. He had no response in what he did. He's never been a leader, Glenn. I played against him for many, many years. A wonderful finisher, natural finisher, was in a great team. But he was never a personality. And that team mirrors him a little bit. They've got no personality. If things are not going well, he does. There's no response. And I don't mean anger. I don't mean anger at all. I think certain players are not going to be like that. But there's no togetherness. There's no quality. There's no drive. And that is a big concern if I'm a Man United fan.
All right, let me take you back to last year, because when they end up in third place, they get Champions League money. We're all saying, okay, now they can invest a little bit more, pick out the areas of need, find a few more players here. This is Manchester United's real chance to sustain what they did and now platform off it. And we're seeing the complete opposite. Is this about the management of the club also?
I think hierarchy. And also, I think we're romantic because we've been spoilt with 25 years of Manchester United and people should want to go there. And yeah, when I see Patrice Evra and Gary Neville and Roy Keane back in the UK saying, you know, Harry Kane should go there, they've lost that because of Sir Alex and what's gone on in recent years. To go there now, you're going to be a brave player because, yes, it is Manchester United. And us older can remember that. But they've not really won a lot of things, not challenged for too long. So do you want to, like a Gareth Bale, go into that environment where you're under pressure from day one? You know, yes, it's obviously a great club and the money, but the board as well and the ownership and the directors there have got to have a big look at themselves because even from David Moyes, Fellaini was never a Manchester United player. You know, good player. But he wasn't, and they just snowballed from there, and the list goes on and on and on, the players that they've had. So at least Ollie is trying to go with young, exciting players, but we know with young, exciting players, that takes time. I just look what Chelsea have done. Chelsea have revamped with a Timo Werner. You know, why are Manchester United not looking for that type of player? I know they've gone with Jadon Sancho, but there's other players around. You know, Hakimi is an outstanding player that could have played in a number of positions. There's other players in certain leagues that could go there and do well. So, you know, it's a mixture of everything then, but it's still Manchester United and you still should be able to attract top-class players.
Well, it's strange. I mean, because now they're linked to Edinson Cavani. I mean, this is a guy that needs service.
So many of their other strikers that they currently have who are younger guys, Rashford and Martial and all these guys, I don't understand it.
It's like you're going back to what Zlatan, you know, they went and got him. That was a stopgap. So Edison Cavani is a stopgap. And they've had time to, I don't think Manchester United have got a plan. I don't think they look and say, right, where are we? Which players in Europe or South America are coming to the end of their contracts? Which players fit our style of football and our philosophy at Man United? Who can handle playing for Manchester United? You know, people going about Maguire's price tag. He can't do a lot about that, but he has to perform better. He's the captain of Manchester United. And his performances, I mean, Glenn as well. I mean, we all want to play out from the back, but it is ridiculous. It is it's embarrassing that what they're trying to do, because it's just, even my kids would not do that. An under nine team, and you know, we want them to play, want to express themselves, but these are professional players. I mean, David De Gea is a top class international player, and he's trying to do that with Maguire and Bailly. I mean, it's insane. And you know, Tottenham must have looked at each other and said, are they really going to try this again? I mean, it reminds me of what Barcelona did against Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich was like, please don't play it. I feel sorry for you. If you're going to do it, I'm going to take the ball off you, Busquets. And they did it, and it had a knock-on effect. So United have got a lot of thinking to do. But you've said it there, Ben, and you're always right. They are some wonderful players, Rashford. But you need to then gel that with other players that are going to complement them. Don't keep getting the similar type of players that are good personalities, just play, and got great skill. They need a leader. They need a man in that changing room that's going to help them.
What happened to Harry Maguire? In the world, you know, last World Cup for England, I every corner he went up on, I was like, this guy's a good bet to score a goal. He was unbelievable. I don't know what happened.
On set pieces, he's a turn. But then it's like you get the price tag, and now all of a sudden he thinks he's a PK that can play out.
Is that what you think it is?
I think they thought, well, yeah, instead of you bought him for what he was at the World Cup, a taxable natural defender. Yep. Now all of a sudden, I think he thinks he would come from Leicester. He's not come from Barcelona or Real Madrid. He's come from Leicester. Don't play out from the back. They head it, kick it, and score goals. That's what they do, and that's what Harry did, and Harry done it very, very well. I think he's gone to Manchester United and thinking, I've got to be Rio Ferdinand. Well, unfortunately, he's not, and he's getting caught out.
Talking to Warren Barton, former Newcastle United defender. Let me take you to Chelsea, because I looked at their lineup from the game this weekend. I did not see the game. Timo Werner, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Kai Havertz, who they got from Germany, Tammy Abraham, Jorginho, and then Pulisic coming off the bench. Mason Mount was on the bench. Giroud. This is shaping up to be a nice roster, huh?
And, you know, two things that jump out. Apart from Giroud, they've all got pace. They're all pacey, quick, though, and that's what Bayern Munich are. But you throw Giroud into that team and they've got a plan B if they need to go into a target man. So I look at Frank, what he's doing, and I can see a plan. I can see the club have got these young, hungry players. They've kept Giroud because they need a man. They need a bit of experience. And they're going to need a different way of playing, because when teams sit back and there's not the space to go in behind, then you're going to have to play a different way. Great to see Christian Pulisic back. You know, they've spoke volumes about him. Giving him the number 10 is a big thing for Chelsea. So he's took that responsibility. They excite me. They've still got problems at the back. I mean, they've got Thiago to come in and try and rectify that. It seems what they've done is, I mean, Petacek's gone out and got the goalkeeper. Exactly what Klopp did at Liverpool. I need a dominant centre-half, Van Dijk. I need a good goalkeeper. They went and fit the bill. And that's what Chelsea have done. Chelsea have gone and got a goalkeeper, an experienced player that will get them through this year. So Zouma and all the other younger players, James, will get more experience with him next to them. And then up front, they can play with Kai Havertz in the hole, Timo Werner down the middle, Thibaut Abraham. They've got options. But come with Chelsea comes with a bit of pressure. But they had a good performance at the weekend. And they excite me, the way if they can all gel together. And I like Frank Lampard. I know him very, very well. He's got something about him. He's not going to back off of Klopp and Mourinho, and he's respectful, but he's not going to be bullied because of what he's achieved in the game. He's still got to achieve more as a coach, and that spurs his young players on. It reminds me of how Fergie was with his legends. Now he would look up for them and look after them, and let them play. And I think Frank will do the same.
With Frank in a managerial role, knowing him the way you know him, what are the areas that he continues to learn from as he goes on here in the Premier League? Because he did the work with Derby. We know he's done the work, but obviously I think you learn by the day, I would imagine, every single game you manage in this league. Where do you think he's getting polished a little bit more? as this goes along?
I think on the defensive side, because he's so forward thinking, and I'm Chelsea, I'm Frank Lampard, I don't care about anybody. That's the way he plays, and you have to play like that when you play at the top. You respect people, but you don't fear anybody. The higher up you go with teams, the Zidanes of this world and Atletico Madrid, you're going to have to be a bit more tactically aware. You can't all push forward. We've seen Pep try it a little bit with two holding midfield players. So he's even changed his little bit. So I think what Frank Lampard's got to try and do is yes, keep that positivity and keep that aggression of how Chelsea, where Chelsea, we're going to play, but also be aware of when you do turn the ball over, where you're vulnerable, how can you be better? You know, the fullback situation with Alonso, he looks like he's rectified that. So there's areas where I think he's, like you said, Glenn, he's learning all the time. He's learning to deal with the media. Like if I was him now, I won't keep arguing with other coaches and their backroom staff. He's made his point. And like Mourinho said, don't get too carried away, you know, and still be humble. Still be humble in what you're doing. But also know that on the back of your mind, I'm Frank Lampard, I'm Chelsea, I've got a right, but you have to earn the right. So there's a couple of things there that I think he just needs to work on. But he will do, Frank. He's got a great, I mean, his dad's around him and his dad will tell him what to do and how to... And what he's been is he's always been a wonderful professional. So he look at himself as well. It's lovely to see him go toe to toe with some of the people on the touchlines.
Yeah. It is fun. It makes for some good entertainment. All right, yeah. Last one before I let you go. We see this result from Aston Villa, and then you look at their roster and some of the changes they've made. They've added Ross Barkley. Ollie Watkins hits for a hat trick in the first half. So the Villas of the world, the Arsenal's on the rise with Arteta now. Do you see the Premier League just getting tougher and tougher now with some of the gains that some of these other clubs have made?
I would throw Everton into that as well with Carlo Ancelotti. I think them. But then on the reverse effect, we've seen Wolves and Sheffield United. They've struggled a little bit. But yeah, I think you're seeing
Leeds is another one.
Yeah, Leeds have hit the bit. But I think Leeds will ride this. I've seen Ipswich do it when they first come up. Sheffield United do it. You know, these teams that just hit the ground running, and then they're going to hit a wall. They could quite easily lose three or four games, even with Bielsa, who, you know, we know is an outstanding coach. So they will hit a wall somewhere along the line, but it probably won't be until after the new year with all the adrenaline and the excitement. And it may help them at the moment not playing in an empty stadium because there's no fans, there's no pressure. They can just go out and play. It's like a practice game. But I think the Premier League now, with how it's shaping up, with the money that was spent, you've just touched on it, Aston Villa, who survived on the last game in the Premier League. So they've reinforced with someone like, as you said, Ross Barkley and the strikers, that they're going to be challenging Newcastle, my team. You know, they're six. And, you know, everyone was asking for Steve Bruce to get sacked a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, they're important with Tottenham, with Mourinho. You know, at the beginning, we thought they're against Everton. They're awful. And he's lost his mojo. And they're on a great run of form. I think you're going to be eight teams challenging for four. And that's where, you know, it's going to be tough. I still think Liverpool and City have got the gap, but I think that gap has been closed by the teams that we mentioned. Now, you wonder if United are going to hang in now, or are they going to fall by? Chelsea, you feel like they're going to be there or thereabouts as well. And, you know, last season it was a bit of an anti-climax. We just lauded how good Liverpool was. This year, I think there will be a race. I think it will be a challenge for everybody.
Warren, as always, thank you very much for coming on. This turned into a nice Premier League segment here, especially with you. So thank you very much for that.
Absolute pleasure, my friend. Take care.
All right. That's Warren Barton, the former Newcastle defender. Does a lot in youth development as well here in the United States.
Big thank you to Warren Barton, and a lot of great games in the Premier League to come. But those two results, the Aston Villa over Liverpool, shocking. And then Manchester United, their performance, absolutely shocking against Spurs. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We've got more to come on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. And you know what? Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, SOC.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, and you're listening to Soccer Matters.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hey, a quick word here for NB Elite Realty and Nebo Bandovic. Now, you might remember him like I did, because I got my broadcasting break back in 1994 doing the Houston Hotshots. Well, Nebo was scoring a bunch of goals for them. He's now been very, very successful post-career through real estate. He finished his soccer career. He's built a real estate investment empire that's got a multi-million dollar portfolio. He's also teaching people how to do the same thing. So you can follow him at Nebo, at Nebo Bandovic, N-E-B-O-B-A-N-D-O-V-I-C on Instagram. And you get the investment tips, secrets. You'll get more information there on how to be mentored by the master himself through his VIP program. That's Nebo Bandovic, N-E-B-O-B-A-N-D-O-V-I-C on Instagram. Now, up in Austin, a lot of things are happening. A $250 million stadium, a $70 million training facility. Josh Wolf named the head coach, the former U.S. international, was an assistant in a number of places around Major League Soccer, including Columbus and with the U.S. men's national team. You've got Claudio Reyna as a sporting director. A lot of good things going on there. A former Dynamo assistant, Davey Arno, who had a great MLS career himself as an assistant coach to Josh Wolf. So to give us a little bit of a sense on what's going on in Austin and where the competition will come in the form of a third MLS team in Texas in the future, this is great stuff. Here is my interview with Josh Wolf. Josh, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
No, my pleasure, as always. Good to be on. Thank you, Glenn.
Yeah, thank you. And I know you're probably going to get some redundant questions here. I can imagine how much media you've done today, but thank you again. So let's get into Cecilio Dominguez coming from Independiente in Argentina. Exciting day for you, and I'm sure when you finally get your man, it's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, I think it's a product of again a lot of work and dialogue and obviously trying to make the deal happen. I think he's a person that we've known about for a long time. I think when we start our process of evaluating players, I think of first it starts with our scouting and that side of it, and obviously we have that in place now, and then it's just getting to know the player, and obviously his desire to come to MLS and trying to make those things happen. So we were able to work through a couple different processes, and again we're excited, really excited to have a top quality player that's, you know, delivered in Paraguay, Mexico, and Argentina, and is at a very good age, and I think that's something that's certainly promising for us as Austin FC coming in, but also for the league. I continue to bring in high quality players, and hopefully they have good impact.
Young DPs. I mean, you as a player in this league, so effective over the years, but we have seen this big shift to younger designated players, and the talent level now in Major League Soccer and the youthfulness of it seems very attractive. It seems like you're trying to capture that in Austin as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. You say how this league has been around and the dynamics certainly changing as far as the profile of players that you're bringing in, what ages they're coming in, and certainly the offensive prowess that they possess. So we're falling in line with some of those more recent teams that have brought in younger talent. The DPs you hope come in and make an impact. And I think for us, it's having a game model and an understanding of how we want to play the game, then looking for players that fit that mold. And then more specifically, what are those players' traits and how are they going to lend to the success of the team? And again, I think with Cecilio, you get a very hungry, humble player that's had some success and certainly had some difficulties as well. But those experiences, both good and bad, help shape the player. And we talked about that immensely with Cecilio. And he's motivated to get here. He's motivated to perform. He has a good understanding of the league and the expansion teams that have come in and had some success and those that haven't. And he's got a good head on his shoulder and a very charismatic player, as is Rodney. And we have a lot of personality in the two players. And we're excited by these first two signings and obviously look forward to getting them in market.
Talking to Josh Wolf, Austin FC coach, exciting signing today, Cecilio Dominguez, a Paraguayan, coming from Independiente in Argentina. So here's a guy, Josh, left-footed, takes people on, gets out of tight spaces, young, creative, all the things you've mentioned, breaks people down in a variety of ways. Add to some of the adjectives that I just mentioned about this guy because, you know, he has the potential here to really be an exciting talisman for your team.
Yeah, I think he's team-oriented. He's goal-orientated. He understands the responsibility of being an attacking player. And something that he pointed out to us was how this league looks and it's, you know, the opportunities for you to be an attacking team, but the responsibility of being a good defending team. And he recognizes that our league tends to have a lot of space, which creates a lot of transition, but also values the understanding of being a responsible defender. And as an attacker, you're happy to hear those things. For us as a coach and for us as a as a team in the league. We want our attackers to score goals, but obviously it's nice to hear him say that you know, the responsibility to defend, the awareness to defend is something that he thinks about as well. And I think collectively we're going to be a team that attacks, and collectively we're going to be a team that defends. And it's about being organized and balanced in both those sides of the ball. But he's a genuine kid. And again, comes in at a very good age with a lot of experience, and we expect him to help guide some of the younger players in our locker room. And Rodney's one of those guys, but there will be more. And his experiences along the way will again be a good opportunity for players to listen and learn from someone that's done it at a good level.
Now, as you know so well, more than most, adapting to Major League Soccer is not an easy thing. We've seen. Even Pity Martinez, South American Player of the Year, was not easy to adapt to this league, although he did have two goals last night, so that's good for Atlanta. But, you know, the transition for it to be a good one, it's more than just the soccer side, right? It's the cultural side, and you have to look, I would assume, when you're speaking to these players coming here for maybe some subtle answers and things that tell you, okay, this guy will fit, he will work.
Yeah, that's a very big point and good point, Glenn. I think we all talk about what the quality looks like on the field, and there's this adaptation on the field as well as off the field. And I think they coexist, or they need to coexist, because having a happy player off the field and having a comfortable player off the field will typically translate to at least getting them into a situation where they're ready to perform, their mind's right, their body's right. So I think we talk about that with the player. Obviously, having a countryman, a younger countryman and Rodney will help that transition off the field. But we're a very diverse city, so I think them assimilating into the Austin landscape will be really important. We'll certainly prepare them and give them the opportunity to ensure that. But it's the culture and environment that we will try to build with domestic players as well as international players. But the quicker we can get them on board with just their general life, their daily cycle and being comfortable, the easier it is for them to go out and perform and be relative when we have games. And that's our first priority. Is getting them up to speed with Austin and certainly MLS.
Josh Wolf, Austin FC coach, joining us. Exciting times with Austin FC going to launch in Major League Soccer in 2021, and so much energy around this right now. So the signing of Cecilio Dominguez and Rodney Redis, for you, Josh, what do you want that? How do you want that to signal something to a fan base? Because I've got some of the supporters groups leaders on tonight. What does that sort of symbolize as well? And then the other thing would be, there's got to be an advantage to having two Paraguayans together, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I think we're fortunate that we landed two Paraguayans. I think the idea is clear as far as the types of signings we're trying to make. We want guys that are. Have offensive qualities and are goal orientated, and I think the flexibility is something that Claudio and I talk about, meaning that they have the positional flexibility to be a winger that can play in pockets or looks to run behind the line. But both Rodney and Cecilia both have played as strikers as well in different systems, so they give us that flexibility that you just may need throughout the year when you have to change up your structure or if there are absences within the roster. And I think, for us, Cecilio is a proven quality out on the left side, and he scores in a variety of ways. And most importantly, he arrives well around the goal. And I think, the signal that we, if we're trying to emit anything, it's just we want to be an attractive attacking team. We want to score goals, and guys that are hungry for goals and have real goal orientation is a big requirement for us. And hopefully over time, they'll show their quality in front of goal. And if they don't, we'll continue to work on that. But a big piece of it is the willingness to put yourself in positions to score, running behind the lines, getting between lines and getting into goal scoring areas. And hopefully our teaching of our game model and giving them that understanding will allow them to, produce those situations and we'll be more successful. But it takes time. And I think these guys are ready. When we talk to them, we feel good about where they are and where they want to go.
Josh, Claudio also said today, Claudio Reyna, the sporting director for Austin FC, during the call, and I think you echoed it as well, that you guys are very excited that these guys will be on loan so that they're not having a long time of being inactive and kind of training on their own, and that there'll be a loan deal that will be done with Cecilio Dominguez likely by the end of the week.
Yeah, we think so. And that's one of the challenges I get coming in as an expansion team is obviously as you acquire internationals, keeping them, in an environment where they're playing and competing, and obviously, you know, we have their rights, and they're coming in for us starting January, but now ensuring that they're in a good environment, that they're still playing games, and obviously they're getting paid by their current clubs or by the club that they're going to get loaned to. So those are some of the first things that we have to go through once we identify the players that we want to go after, is ensuring that all of that is thought of and is well represented when you know, constructing a deal. And obviously for Cecilia, that's still being determined, but there's a number of suitors there for him, and having spoken with his agent and understanding what that landscape looks like, I'm sure he'll find a team shortly. And again, for him, it's about playing. He's been in Asuncion for a while now, and it's good that he's staying fit, but optimally he's playing games week in and week out. So when he comes in to January with the rest of the team, he's in a place that's ready to go.
Austin FC coach Josh Wolf joining us here on the Horn Soccer Matters here tonight. We really appreciate the time. Roster from scratch. You've gotten these two great signings here to kick things off. What's the next most coveted piece you're looking for? Now, obviously, you're looking for a lot of players, but is there a focus positionally now? What's next for you? Is it a number six? Is it a center back with experience? Is there any focus for you right now, Josh, outside of, you know, obviously you got to fill a roster in a lot of positions?
Yeah, I think that's the key, is there's a lot of positions that we're looking into right now. Both of those in particular that you just spoke of are keys. Obviously, as you're building out a team, you look at that spine of the team and what that can look like with center backs, center mids, attacking mids, kind of the voice and backbone of the group. And obviously, we have two really good attackers that are honest on the outsides, but will give us real offensive quality. And the next area, I think, like you said, is trying to find players within our league as well and internationally that can kind of fit those central roles, whether it's the center back, center mids, or the attacking mids. And you know, priorities all over the field, but I agree, I think that's an area that we'll continue to dive into heavily, as we already are.
Josh, do you ever worry, you know, there's so many center backs now in the world, and I had this discussion with someone the other day, and you know, they're all excellent passers of the ball technically, but sometimes you might question, you know, the one-on-one marking ability, the defensive qualities, you know, the intimidating factor of the central defender. Do you sometimes worry that we now look at center backs as you know, really we look at them technically first, as opposed to a blend of the technique and also a little bit of stoutness back there?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance. That's the point that you're getting to, is understanding that there is a technical component too. There is this physical component, this anticipation and positioning aspect. So obviously the very, very high level talented ones probably, you know, have a bit of all of that and operate at a high level at all of that. And, you know, I think players in MLS, sometimes you get a little more of one area and less in another area, but that's still good enough. I think if you get the balance right along your back line, what do you have out to that center back's left side? What do you have to that center back's right side? What's in front of them? And then just try to help teach them and guide them into how they're trying to make decisions and help guide the players around the field. Those are things that you try to teach. With the ball, it's again trying to get them to feel comfortable with what you're trying to achieve in the game model. If you want to build up and what that looks like, or if you're more direct, what that looks like. So I think it can be done in a variety of ways. It's, you know, again, I think trying to understand what it is you want to do with the ball and fitting guys around that can help execute that, or at least execute it as best as possible. And plenty of good players in our league as well. So we're gonna look heavily, as we already are, within MLS and see what we can find. And obviously, if we have to go outside the league, we'll do that as well.
Davey Arno, a former teammate of yours, now on the staff, a tremendous career in Major League Soccer, teammate of yours, seems like a really great fit with your past history together in the game.
Yeah, no, I've known Davey for a number of years and playing with him in Kansas City, and obviously stayed in touch with him as he's gone more into the coaching side and his experiences in Houston. So we talked a lot last year. We've talked a lot over the years, and I have loads of respect for Davey as a soccer player, but even more so as a person. He's an honest person. He works very hard, very passionate about soccer and playing soccer in a good way. And that's you know, that's indicative of who he is and how he's captained so many teams around the league and has had a very accomplished MLS career. And even going into the coaching forum and his experience experiences there, again, lend to what we're trying to do in Austin. And he'll bring great experiences and certainly great knowledge as well. And for me already, the ability to ask questions and, you know, check our process for how we're evaluating situations or people, it's just good to have another voice around and someone that has his experience and certainly care with the game of, in MLS.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Let's let you get back to your family. I know it's been a long day of media for you, but probably a very satisfying one as well. Thank you so much, as always, for being so generous with your time coming on the show.
You bet. Thanks, Glenn.
Absolutely great to have a third team here in Texas with Austin FC coming in, and there's going to be some great road trips for people. Stadium is amazing. It's open on the four corners, and it also has a roof over all the seating. So, some interesting stuff happening up there. There's going to be three great young coaches in the state of Texas with Josh Wolf at Austin FC, Todd Ramos here with our Dynamo, and then, of course, right down the road or up the road in Dallas, Luchi Gonzalez. So bigger turf wars coming in the future. My thanks to Josh Wolf for that interview. All right, we're going to take a break here. Break is brought to you by Lustau Vermouth. Now, Lustau Vermouth is fun. You get a little Spain in your life. Lustau. You can do it over ice. You can do it over ice with tonic water. You can use club soda. My favorite is pairing it in a gin and tonic with my favorite gin. And you break a little orange peel over it, a few drops of lime juice. Lustau Vermouth is refreshing. Try the Rojo with hints of caramel and cola. You can use the Rojo in a Manhattan or a Negroni. You can really experiment with this and change it out for things that you use in other cocktails. Or you can do the rosé. That's got a hint of vanilla, or the white, which has a little hint of rosemary. Both great in gin and tonics. Lustau Vermouth, ask for it at your local liquor store. They will order it. We thank them for their support of the show. Stay with us. When we come back, we wrap it up with some women's soccer talk. The Houston Dash have been tearing it up. They're at Orlando tomorrow night. Bree Vasali joins me.
This is ESPN. 97.5.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 as we roll on tonight, this weekend, well, actually, tomorrow night, the Houston Dash will take on the Orlando Pride coming off the successful NWSL Challenge Cup and also now in the series where they're playing a number of different teams coming off a win against the North Carolina Courage. This interview coming up now with Bree Vasali of the Houston Dash is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm are the presenting sponsors of this show. Bree, thank you very much for coming on the program tonight.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, go back to the Challenge Cup and just where that confidence began to bloom for you, because you played some very important minutes in that tournament.
Yeah, I think a lot of that tournament was very interesting, obviously, in light of everything that was going on in the world at the time. And for myself, I knew that it was a unique opportunity and a really special time to be brought into the NWSL, having formerly played in England. So when I got the opportunity, I just was more excited than anything to have the chance and take the field with my teammates. And I'm also was really lucky to be a champion as well doing it. So yeah, it was a lot of fun and honestly just a great opportunity and experience overall.
How does it feel to be a part of a big turnaround here? Because this is a big turnaround. I mean, there's a winning mentality now. It seems very defined. James Clarkson leading the way. All of you seem very, very bought in. This is very different. How do you feel being a part of a turnaround like this?
Yeah, obviously you want to be part of the good parts of everything. And being a player, you also have a lot of pride and it's part of your experience. And I obviously have had a honor being here and it's been exciting, and I think we're keep building towards what it is that we will eventually become. And that's the exciting part, is that I don't even think we've actually reached the full potential of the squad, and I don't even think I've fully reached my potential as a player, nor have I shown what I'm still capable of doing currently. So it's just really exciting because with the current, I guess, roster updates, you could say, and moving forward, it's just, it's all a very exciting period, and we're only in the building phase. So what's to come next is, again, exciting. I can't say it enough.
Bree Vasali joining us of the Houston Dash. Bree, take us into and give us a glimmer what training sessions are like from your lens, because, you know, the public's not able to watch them now. None of us in the media can really watch them. What are the training sessions like? Take us in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the training sessions are healthy, but also competitive. Every day is a grind, and I think I'd be lying if I didn't say I was physically challenged on a regular basis. The Houston humidity is no joke. That was one thing that I had to adjust, especially coming from a wet, cold climate like England. And ever since then, obviously, the caliber of players that you get to play with on a regular basis make you compete, and no one's spot is quote-unquote guaranteed within the group, and I think that's what makes also training such an exciting and also worthwhile time for every player, is that you're always growing, you're always pushing yourself to be your best self. So yeah, I definitely think it's a very competitive, but it's also fun. I have a lot of fun with my teammates, and I think that's what you see with that togetherness on the field, and all of us coming together collectively, is that drive and that ability to compete but also be healthy while doing so. So yeah.
Bree Vasali joining us of the Houston Dash. Okay, the game has taken you a lot of places. It took you over to the UK, West Ham United, Birmingham. I want to go in a little deeper with that. But in all these travels now, going through this whole COVID thing, as an athlete, have you found a deeper sense of appreciation for the game maybe?
Yeah, especially during the time when we had to quarantine and do a lot of workouts by ourselves in our own isolation. There was a period of time where I was living at home with my parents again, so that's definitely an adjustment, having lived an entire continent away. So I think that the game has also become something of like an opportunity for everyone, because we weren't sure if we were going to have any games moving forward at the beginning of, I think, February, when things started getting locked down. So the fact that we were able to compete in a bubble, it's just been an awesome experience. And hopefully we can keep, I guess, taking care of business when we get the opportunities. So, yeah.
So my ex-teammates, Paul Riley, and he's done a wonderful job with the North Carolina Courage, but you guys have had two results where you stood right up to them. How confidence building are these results, including the last home win against the North Carolina Courage? And you know, how significant are these types of wins? Because they are the types of things that can platform, right?
Definitely. I think for a while, North Carolina has been the litmus standard for women's football in the United States. And that's a credit to Riley and his staff, and also the recruitment of the players that he currently has in that group. So obviously when we faced them in the fall series, it was our first time. We hadn't actually seen them in the Challenge Cup. So that was a true test to see if we were actually capable of consistently performing as champions. And to get the results that we got, I mean, obviously playing with 10 men at North Carolina was disappointing. But moving forward, we then proved that we were capable of actually getting the job done. So again, I think it was an awesome experience because, like I said, they had been on the top for so long and have been consistently, that you have to come into that scenario with some respect, but also wanting to be a better team and prove that the Challenge Cup wasn't a fluke. It was something that we are building on. And we didn't want to take our foot off the gas, especially the second time around, and we don't want to take our foot off the gas again against Orlando, because it's, again, another building block towards the next upcoming season. So, yeah, I think, like you said, he's done a great job, but we're also very proud of the success that we've created in team culture, quite frankly, within the Houston Dash.
So James Clarkson has done a good job of leading the change in team culture and everything. Take me into that a little bit deeper and how that makes you feel as a player.
I think team culture is probably one of the more important aspects of the game that kind of gets overlooked. And with James, I think he wants to create an environment where everyone feels valued, and regardless of your role on the team, someone has an important job to do. And I think you can see that with his recruitment and personnel changes that he's made in this current season, and who knows what's going to happen in the following season. But I can only imagine that he's going to just continue to grow the type of culture that he wants and the type of locker room and personnel. And I'd say we're pretty hardworking, and that's a huge component of our identity. And regardless of what's happening, we consistently trust the process, and we keep fighting for obviously each other and what we know we're capable of. So I think that would be a great way to sum up our team culture and the people that he's bringing in that would fit that type of personnel.
Hardworking and work ethic. We've definitely seen that, and a lot of great goals as well, and a lot of good collective defending. When you head into Orlando for this game, having played them already, what are some of the big keys for you, Bree?
I think as a group, we really want to get another result against them. We want to make sure that it's not just a home advantage, but also it's everything is consistent with what we do on and off the field. And I think personally, obviously, I want to keep contributing to the team's success and whatever that looks like. So, yeah, I'm really excited for this weekend coming up, and hopefully we'll have another exciting match and thrilling scoreline for a lot of our fans.
Last one or two before I let you go. Okay, so playing in England now, we see a lot of NWSL-based players making the jump across the pond now. It seems to be more of that going on. Big brands, big names. You played for one of them, West Ham. Talk to me about the appeal now and where you see these two leagues in the future. Will there be heavy competition for players down the road?
Yeah, obviously you've seen the tremendous growth with the Barclays FAWSL. I think my first season was the first season that was fully professional. So the growth has been tremendous over the last two seasons itself. And like you said, it's attracting big names, big players. And I think moving forward, the NWSL is going to have its work cut out in terms of retention and keeping players here in the U.S. But I also think the NWSL is and will always be one of the best leagues in the world. So I think with that being said, it's just only a matter of preference for players. But I think both leagues will be hopefully beneficial for overall the growth of the women's game in general. So it's always good to have healthy competition. And I think it's awesome to see the success that the English league is currently having. But I also think it'll bolster a response here in the NWSL to continue to push for even better standards within this league.
Compare the game in England to the game in the NWSL. What are some of the differences? What are some of the nuances in your mind, having played in both?
I would say that currently, or at least the most previous experience that I've had in England, the game is a bit more methodical and a little bit more slower. Whereas in the NWSL, it's 110% from the first minute to the 90th minute and even into stoppage time. So there's really no resting on the ball. It's constantly go, go, go. And when you get your opportunity, you take it in the NWSL. So yeah, in that regard, I would say that just kind of dictates play, and it's a little bit more transitional in the NWSL in that sense. But also, that's not to say one's better than the other. They're just entirely different beasts, because I think the NWSL happens to also have really good athletes as well, which drives that standard of play to be very high and that type of fitness level to also be very high. So that would be just kind of my general observations from both leagues.
Bree, is there more time spent by coaches over there on the tactical side of the game? Would that be fair to say or no?
In my experience, I've only had one season here, and it was a very brief one, and I also joined preseason late. So I can't say that I have received all the tactical information that every player has gotten, but I would say that in the FAWSL, it's a bit more methodical. And at least with the team that I was on, we would change our formation a lot, or how we pressed and how we looked at the way they play out from the back. But still here, I think James does a really excellent job of preparing us as most as he can for the matches that we have. So he does also do the same playing out from the back and other things like that sort without giving too much away. But yeah, I think it's a little bit more in depth than the English league. But then again, I feel like we've had such a short season that less information is best, because you can tend to, I guess, get caught up in details versus the overall grand picture of things. So, yeah, I think I'm not quite sure I could answer that without being 100% certain.
No problem at all. Bree, listen, best of luck against Orlando. Thank you very much for taking the time out to join us on the show tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thanks.
All right, that's the talented Bree Vassali. And, of course, the Houston Dash will be taking on Orlando tomorrow night. That's a game I think you can catch on Twitch. That'll do it for us tonight on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. For all who tuned in tonight, we thank you very much for that. For Aaron Raybould, for Victor Ariza, thank you. Until next week, on behalf of the firm, good night.
ESPN 97.5.